Lesson 11, Section 1, Part 1, A Way of Life.
Well, Mr. Thompson, the first and important thing I have to tell you is that there is really nothing seriously wrong with you. Physically, that is. My very thorough re-examination and the analyst's report show that basically you are very fit. Yes, very fit.
So, why is it, Doctor, that I'm always so nervy, tense, ready to jump on anybody? My wife, children, colleagues.
I think your condition has a lot to do with, what shall we call it? Way of life? Habits?
Way of life? Habits?
Yes. Now, tell me, Mr. Thompson. You smoke, don't you?
Yes. I'm afraid I do, Doctor.
And, rather heavily, I imagine?
Well, yes. I smoke, what, about 40, 50 a day, I suppose.
You should do your best to stop, you know.
Yes, I see, but, well, it won't be the first time. I've tried to give up smoking several times, but it's no good.
You see, 50 a day is overdoing it, you must admit. You must cut it down, at least that. Oh, yes, I know that when you're feeling tense, you probably feel that a cigarette relaxes you. But in the long run, I do advise you to make a real effort.
Of course. That's, well, it's easy to say give it up or cut it down. But, well, you know.
Well, in my opinion, you have no choice. Either you make a real effort or there's no real chance of your feeling better. You see, well, obviously I could prescribe some kind of tranquilizer. But would that help? I prefer, and I'm quite sure you'll agree, I prefer to see you really back to normal. Not just seemingly so. And that's my reason for asking you several more questions about your other habits.
Right.
Your eating habits, for example. What do you eat normally, during a normal day?
Yes. Well, I'm a good eater. Yes, I'd say I'm a good eater. Now, let's see. Up at 8 in the morning, and my wife has a good breakfast ready.
A good breakfast?
The usual. A cereal, followed by bacon and eggs with fried bread and perhaps a tomato or two. Then toast and marmalade. All washed down with a couple of cups of tea. Yes. I really enjoy my breakfast.
Yes, I can see you do. But I'd advise you to eat rather less. We'll come to that later. Go on.
Then lunch. First brunch. A cup of coffee and a bun at 11. Lunch has to be quick because there's so much to do in the office about that time. So I have a pint and a sandwich in the pub. All very hurried.
Try to be in less of a hurry.
But I make up for it in the evening. I get home at about 7. Dinner's round about 8. Yes. My wife's an excellent cook. Excellent. It's usually some meat dish. And we like spaghetti as a first course. Spaghetti, a meat dish, cheese, a sweet. But then, at the end of the day, shall we say, then I begin to feel on edge again. Most evenings after dinner we read or watch TV, but I get this terrible feeling of tension.
Well, I'm sorry to have to say this, because you obviously enjoy your food. But, I really do recommend that you eat less. And secondly, that you eat more healthily. Instead of having that enormous breakfast, for example, try to be content with a fruit juice and some cereal.
I see. But,
11s is, right, well, that's all right, but lunch should be more leisurely. Remember, your health is at stake, not your job. As for dinner, I'd advise you to eat a soup, perhaps, with a salad. A salad followed by some fruit.
But my wife's cooking
is superb, granted. And she probably enjoys preparing delicious meals for you. If you like, I'll have a word with your wife.
No, that won't be necessary. Thanks, just the same, Doctor. But no.
And on that subject, Mr. Thompson, just one other thing. I'm sure this won't embarrass you. You say you feel tense in the evenings after dinner. Might I ask, please forgive this question, but it's necessary. Might I ask about your relationship, your sexual relationship, that is, with your wife?
Well, you see...
Task 2. Do it yourself.
Well, I'm very impressed by all the work you've done on your house, Mr. Miller. How long have you been working on it?
I first became interested in do-it-yourself several years ago. See, my son Paul is disabled. He's in a wheelchair. And I just had to make alterations to the house. I couldn't afford to pay workmen to do it. I had to learn to do it myself.
Have you had any experience with this kind of work? Did you have any practical skills?
No. I got a few books from the library, but they didn't help very much. Then I decided to go to evening classes so that I could learn basic carpentry and electrics.
What sort of changes did you make to the house?
First of all, practical things to help Paul. You never really realize the problems handicapped people have until it affects your own family. Most government buildings, for example, have steps up to the door. They don't plan buildings so that disabled people can get in and out. We used to live in a flat, and of course it was totally unsuitable. Just imagine the problems a disabled person would have in your house. We needed a large house with wide corridors so that Paul could get from one room to another. We didn't have much money, and we had to buy this one. It's over 90 years old, and it was in a very bad state of repair.
Where did you begin?
The electrics. I completely rewired the house so that Paul could reach all the switches. I had to lower the light switches and raise the power points. I went on to do the whole house, so that Paul could reach things and go where he wanted.
What else did you do?
By the time I'd altered everything for Paul, do-it-yourself had become a hobby. I really enjoyed doing things with my hands. Look, I even installed smoke alarms.
What was the purpose of that?
I was very worried about fire. You see, Paul can't move very quickly. I fitted them so that we would have plenty of warning if there were a fire. I put in a complete burglar alarm system. It took weeks. The front door opens automatically, and I'm going to put a device on Paul's wheelchair so that he'll be able to open and close it when he wants.
What are you working on now?
I've just finished the kitchen. I've designed it so that he can reach everything. Now, I'm building an extension so that Paul will have a large room on the ground floor where he can work.
There's a £10,000 prize. How are you going to spend it?
I'm hoping to start my own business so that I can convert ordinary houses for disabled people. I think I've become an expert on the subject.
Section 2. My first job.
The first job I ever had was as a waitress. I did it the summer before I started at university when I was 18. I was working in a very nice hotel in a small town in Scotland where there are a lot of tourists in the summer, so they were taking on extra staff. I arrived there in the evening and met some of the other girls who were working at the hotel. We all lived in a little house opposite the hotel. Anyway, they were all really friendly, and we had dinner together, and then sat around chatting and drinking coffee. I didn't get to bed until after 1 o'clock in the morning. I had to be at work in the dining room at 7:30 in the morning to start serving breakfast. Well, I didn't wake up till 7:15, so I threw my clothes on, rushed over to the hotel. I must have looked a real mess, because the head waiter just looked at me and told me to go to the bathroom to tidy myself up. I was so embarrassed. The first thing I learned was that there were these two heavy swing doors into the kitchen from the restaurant. One for going into the kitchen and one for going out, so that the waiters coming in didn't bump into the ones going out. Anyway, that morning I was so frightened of the head waiter that I didn't listen properly to what he was saying. So when one of the waiters asked me to give him a hand and take two plates of eggs and bacon and an orange juice out to the restaurant, I went straight towards the wrong door and collided with another waiter coming in. You can't imagine the mess. Eggs, bacon and orange juice all over the floor, the door, the waiter and me. The other waiter thought it was quite funny, but the head waiter was furious and made me clear everything up straight away in case someone slipped and fell. After serving breakfast at about 10 o'clock, we had our own breakfast. I was starving by then and just wanted to sit down and eat quietly. But some of the waiters started making fun of my English accent. They were all Scottish. I think they were just trying to cheer me up and have a joke. But I was so upset and hungry that I just rushed off to the bathroom in tears. I thought everybody hated me. By the time I came back, they'd cleared up all the breakfast things, and I hadn't had a chance to eat anything. Well, straight away we started getting the dining room ready for lunch, cleaning the silver, setting the tables, hoovering the floor. The room had a beautiful view over a river with the mountains behind. But of course, as soon as I stopped work to have a look out of the window, the head waiter spotted me and told me off again. I didn't make too bad a job of serving lunch. One of the waiters looked after me and showed me how to do things. One of the customers ordered some expensive white wine, and I gave him a bottle from the cupboard, not from the fridge, so it wasn't cold enough. But fortunately, the other waiters hid the bottle I'd opened wrongly and gave him another bottle from the fridge, so the head waiter didn't find out. I would have been quite happy, but I had another problem, which was that I'd got up in such a hurry, I'd just put on the shoes I'd been wearing the night before. Well, these shoes looked quite smart, but they had really high heels. And after a few hours on my feet, I was in agony, and there was nothing I could do about it. There was certainly no time to go and change them. I can tell you, I never wore those shoes to work again. Anyway, after lunch, we had our own lunch. I managed to get something to eat this time, and we were free in the afternoon. I went for a walk with one of the other girls, and we got a bit lost, so I didn't have time for any rest before we went back to work at 6. By the time we finished serving dinner at about 10:30, I was completely exhausted. I'd never worked so hard in my life, I think. Of course, I stayed up chatting with the other girls that night too, and most of the other nights I was there. I fell into bed at night and out of it at 7 the next morning. But I loved the job after a while, believe it or not. And I even went back to work there the next year. I never got on very well with the head waiter, though.
Section 3, Task 1, Learning to Rephrase.
1.
The Landsats are two butterfly-shaped spacecraft that were sent into orbit around the Earth in 1972 and 1975.
2.
They circle the Earth 14 times every 24 hours at a height of 570 miles or 918 kilometers above the Earth.
3.
From the photographs sent from the satellites, scientists are learning things about the Earth they have never known before.
4.
In false colors, water is black, cities are blue-green, rock is brown, healthy plants are red, and diseased plants are green. The white areas show barren land.
5.
Because photographs from the satellite are taken looking directly down on the land from such a height, they are more accurate than earlier photographs taken from airplanes.
6.
The second use of these Landsat photographs is to help find oil and minerals.
7.
Although these two Landsats have already produced a lot of very important information about the world, they are just the beginning.
8.
Later Landsats may be equipped to photograph even smaller areas, or they may be equipped with radar.
Task 2. Dictation.
Body positions. People often show their feelings by the body positions they adopt. These can contradict what you're saying. Especially when you're trying to disguise the way you feel. For example, a very common defensive position assumed when people feel threatened in some way is to put your arm or arms across your body. This is a way of shielding yourself from a threatening situation. This shielding action can be disguised as adjusting one's cuff or watch strap. Leaning back in your chair, especially with your arms folded, is not only defensive, it's also a way of showing your disapproval. Of a need to distance yourself from the rest of the company.
A position which betrays an aggressive attitude is to avoid looking directly at the person you are speaking to. On the other hand, approval and desire to cooperate are shown by copying the position of the person you are speaking to. This shows that you agree or are willing to agree with someone. The position of one's feet also often shows the direction of people's thoughts. For example, feet or a foot pointing towards the door can indicate that a person wishes to leave the room. The direction in which your foot points can also show which of the people in the room you feel most sympathetic towards. Even when you are not speaking directly to that person.